This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
Looking good, Michael.
Really?
Feeling good.
You
Roger.
Never called me Michael. What's going on?
Molly Ringwald.
Oh, I know. Okay, take me through. We haven't really downloaded post-Molly Ringwald on the show last night.
I'm not post-Molly Ringwald, mate.
Oh, you're in. You're deeply in with Molly Ringwald.
No, I'm just in it.
I did notice a few times during the taping last night that she looked at you a certain way.
What kind of way? With horror?
A little bit.
I think the word recoiling is a verb I'd probably use.
I think you were growing on her.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean...
Like mould.
I need to be clear to people who didn't see the show.
Yeah.
Which is up on Roku and Apple and all that stuff. It followed a very,
iTunes.
Very good, very, very Serious. Good tractor pull
oh.
on NBCSN. I'm getting really into the tractor pulling.
Big lead in for us, the tractor
the
pulling.
The red one.
Yeah.
The red tractor almost beat the blue one. It was amazing.
Was his name Percy?
But the woman... who, as Andy Walsh in Pretty in Pink,
yeah.
was largely responsible for luring me to America like a siren, tempting yeah. ancient sailors onto the rocks.
She took you through the change. The change. You went through the change.
I'm not sure I've come out the other
what
side
What year was
of
it?
The
it was around the time that you were going through
it was.
Puberty. A horrible
I'm still
word,
going through puberty.
Okay.
I'm still getting through it. Pop Culture Spin tweeted us to say, wow, the show was like the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. But aside from Molly, it had more baldness.
A lot more baldness. Although we were bewigged during the entire act the first, Rog.
Yeah, we were in our Halloween costumes. We were yeah. Chuck men in blazers last night. At Schnitzitz tweeted us to say, great Chuck blazer outfit. You're just missing the chicken palm stains on the shirt.
We had some of those. It was the amount of cotton wool that we had to stuff down the front of our shirts. When I got home last night, I went for a drink with my mate Massimo, and I got a very fancy bar, got home, and decided to have an early night, Rog.
Yep.
Took off my shirt. So much cotton wool fell out. I still had so much cotton wool in my shirt.
Did they give you
shirt.
Cotton wool to put up your shirt? They gave me yeah. asbestos filler that they got from the local...
It may as well have been. It was very scratchy.
From a high school somewhere. It was unbelievably painful, but we committed. And I was really delighted when producer Lexi sent out the photo of us as Chuck Blazer. Almost all of you thought we dressed up as Kenny Loggins for some bizarre reason. But Molly Ringwald, I'll just say, America is amazing.
It is.
What a remarkable... moment it was in my young life.
Yeah.
I keep talking about the 13-year-old boy inside me.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of people over Twitter have told me that sounds like I've got some kind of paedophile ring.
Inside
that I'm involved
you.
In. Yeah, inside of me. So
yeah.
I can't say that. But the young Rog, to be able to ask Molly Ringwald a question that plagued me from the very first time I saw Breakfast Club, that line, when you grow up, your heart dies. To be able to ask her whether that's a life truth. And she just spat out, no. It was very fulfilling, even though, what's she going to say? Yes, it's true, actually. I have found out my heart does die.
Mm-hmm.
But I took a pattern of relief from it, David.
My favourite part was when you did the lipstick thing during the promo.
Yeah.
And before
when she saw the lipstick come out,
she immediately went, wait a minute, what's going on? I said, don't worry, you don't have to do anything. And you did it. And as you were doing it, just the look on her face... she loved it. That's when I think she fell just a little bit in love with you, Roger.
Not when she saw in my head.
Well, there was also that.
And I was annoyed it wasn't permanent marker. Come off real quick. I've not got a tattoo, but
yeah.
I would get that. I would have got that tattooed onto my forehead if it was permanent. Talking about Chuck Blazer, Dave, this isn't just Men in Blazers.
It's not.
This is Million Dollar Contract Men in Blazers.
Oh, Million Dollar Contract
yeah.
Men in Blazers. Yeah, someone seems to have gone into my email. I don't know how. And they are...
It's a thing called WikiLeaks. You might have heard of it.
But I don't believe that the contract was on WikiLeaks. Anyway, we'll look into it. A team of lawyers and SWAT team members as part of MC Row are looking into it right now. And they've published our contract. I must say, I do feel somewhat violated.
You do?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I don't really care. I'm very transparent. If people ask me... I mean, I get in trouble all the time. People ask me how much people make, how much I make, what goes on. And I tell them. But... it just feels weird when somebody goes into your computer and takes stuff which is private and publishes out there for the world. I just think it's a violation. I think it's cowardly as well.
You do?
Yeah. What's your view?
I think it's great.
Was it you?
Yeah, I've been scanning you. I've been trying to get hack into your email for a long time. It's amazing.
Yeah, most of it is boring. As you've pointed out before, my emails are very short and they usually contain the word brilliant.
Yeah. The notion of Men in Blazers having a $1 million contract. I love that idea.
Yeah.
I wish it was $1 million talent contract.
Can we have one of those?
Yeah, I'd love it. It's a production contract for which we have to sadly deliver, write, produce, shoot.
Yeah. Well, actually, unfortunately, you know, I run a production company. I run Embassy Row. And the long-suffering Tammy Johnston, my GM, my head of production, we have to hand over what seems like a lot of money, but to actually make a year's worth of episodes and all of the other content we make, it actually is nothing. And she gives us this look constantly. She pretty much greets you now whenever you come into the office with sort of somewhere between a scowl and a grunt, yep. Pretty much, Tammy Johnston.
I think all I'll say is I'm as close to being a millionaire as Eddie Murphy at the beginning of Trading Places. Big dreams.
Yeah.
Big dreams. I'm investing in pork bellies. And I'm sorry to all the haters to take away this contract issue, but you can't hate us more than we hate ourselves.
And can I just say something?
You
we
really
don't
can't.
Care.
Oh, I hate us. David
I personally, I do not care at what people. I said this in the story the other day about BlazerCon. I really do not care about what people who hate us think about us. It just does not bother me.
You're talking about
at
my
all.
Mother-in-law.
I've always been someone who. What people say behind my back has never bothered me. It only bothers me what people say to my face. If it's nice to my face, I just could care less.
I didn't mean
but
it,
I do
David.
Care.
I didn't mean
but
it.
I do care about what the people who like us and happen to sort of share our joy in what we do and the game we love with us. I care about what they think. It's why we're making it clear that that is a production contract and it's not a talent deal. One day when we have a $10 million talent deal, though, I'll be delighted to publish it.
Julian Assange, you'll be the first to know.
Yeah.
I'll email you a copy of that contract myself.
Yeah, that'd be very good. Alert, Rog, a new drug that can grow hair.
Yeah, one sent in by GFOP at Dan Boom, who tweeted.
Mice discovery. By the way, I love that. A mice discovery. That's amazing work that mice are doing.
They're better than scientists.
It's like Pinky in the Brain. Mice discovery shows promise for rapid and robust hair growth in bald humans. A serendipitous discovery. So obviously the mice were working on something
I just love
what
it.
What were the mice Wait, working on
can I just
when
say,
they made that serendipitous discovery?
I don't know how many mice listen to this podcast. But we want to thank you. I'm sure in the mice community, you've got a lot of issues to work on.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're spending time working on baldness, it's very fulfilling.
A serendipitous discovery. I'm sure that's what the mice thought. Leads Columbia University researchers to conclude that a drug applied directly to the skin could show real promise for broadly treating hair loss.
I also want to say to mice that are listening, we don't take any pleasure in whatever process you were being tortured for one thing and then suddenly the scientist pivoted.
Serendipitous.
Don wants to know, at Don Boom, if this drug comes to market and it could give you a full head of hair, would you take it?
Are you asking me that?
Or I think you plural, David.
God, that is the question I was thinking the second I read that. Because I don't think I would. I think that there's still something fake. There is still something bald denying. If you are naturally a bald and you then apply something to your head to stop the natural, I would assume, God-given joy of baldness, it still seems a little bit fake to me.
I wouldn't do it just because I stand with mice. I couldn't
do it. You
wouldn't do it. No, I'm bald to my core. Being bald is as much part of my identity and biography as coming from Liverpool.
I want to give myself some wiggle room like Donald Trump. I might be inclined, just for showbiz purposes, just as an entertainment, as an experiment, to see if it would work. Perhaps just sector 3.1.
He did do an experiment to see if it would work.
I wouldn't go to 3.3.
Doesn't look so good. It's like saying, don't be an Everton fan.
Yeah.
Don't be a pessimist.
Yeah.
It's just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
My hair being a withered limb. It's like how I see the world. I think being bald is probably one of my top two identities.
It is.
So I don't understand why more balds don't rise up together.
Yeah.
It always annoys me. I've talked about this before.
It humiliate people for not being bald. We sort of like get behind Jason Statham and Telly Savalas.
I don't understand why when I see a bald man on the subway where we don't say, just nod at each other. We're in this together.
In fraternity, you mean.
We're in this together. I would probably take something that would give me proper eyebrows then.
Yeah, I know.
I only ever got half brows.
People who watch you on TV don't understand that, Rog, because on TV we do fairly intense prosthetic work to give you eyebrows every week.
I've got half brows.
You do have half brows.
Yeah, does that make me a bald tonight?
One is slightly bigger than the other. One is slightly... Your left eyebrow is slightly more pronounced than your right eyebrow.
Maybe I've been a bald tonight all these years. It's like, I'm like, what's her name? Madeleine Albright finding out I was Jewish at the age of 70. I'm actually a bald tonight and I never knew it.
Did you ever have eyebrows?
Never. Never. Only ever had.
You don't have receding eyebrows.
I told you, though. I'm still going through puberty.
the change. Still going through the change.
Oh, the other story that cheered me up hugely, David.
Huge story. Barnsley fan falls asleep on toilet, Rog.
A story from the third tier of English football. Barnsley fan rescued from deserted stadium after falling asleep on toilet. This is from The Guardian.
A Barnsley fan fell asleep on the toilet at halftime during the home defeat to Fleetwood on Saturday and woke up 7 hours later to find the ground deserted. The supporter managed to escape into the Oakwell concourse before setting off a security alarm. Firefighters arrived to find the man in his 20s standing on top of a temporary building calling for help. A Barnsley Fire Station spokesperson told the Yorkshire Post, "We got the call through to attend Oakwell, and usually it's just a false alarm, but we turned up and saw this young lad trying to get our attention. We had to get the ladder to get him down.
Get
he
ladder.
Had no shoes on and had lost his mobile phone and his hat. He was more bothered about his hat, though. He seemed a smartly dressed lad. The fan blamed the incident on drinking too many beers..." But nothing wrong with that. But just drink responsibly. But despite his remarkable stupor, he didn't miss much. Barnsley were down 1-0 at the break, and that is how it stayed.
And this, to me, I think is the ultimate sad nap. I don't know if any of our listeners have had a sad nap that can lay claim to one.
Yeah.
But when I read this, it made mine.
Yeah, these are that is
all
the perils.
Sad naps I've had look like amateur.
Yeah, that is the perils of sad napping, right there.
The thing I find most disgusting about it, David. Yeah. It's not the fact that he was locked in the toilet. It's the fact that he went into the toilet in the first place with no shoes on.
Really?
Yeah, look at people who do that on planes. Just pad into the doop-doop, just walk down the aisle into the toilet in their socks. I look at them like... I mean, to go into an aeroplane bathroom in just your socks. It's just like a feat of bravery / foolishness on a David Blaney
scale.
Yeah,
you're right. BlazerCon, Rog, the complete BlazerCon schedule with panels and times is now available at meninblazers.com.
We're down to our last 100 tickets. I couldn't be more excited.
We're very excited, Rog.
Wide array of football thinkers. But they're coming to spend the weekend discussing the old shifting plates, the old shifting tectonic plate to the gliding underneath the global game. We've got representatives from the men's game, the women's game. Commissioners of the Premier League, Bundesliga, MLS, team owners from Premier League, La Liga, MLS, US Women's National Team stars, Rebecca Lowe, Carl Martino, Alexi Lalas, Brad Friedel, some of our favourite broadcasters we most admire, and the mighty Ray Ray Hudson.
And the cherry on the cake, Rog, Charlie Walbrook. Charlie is a Red. Going to be joining us, Rog.
Take this message. Listen and learn.
Oh my gosh, I've just been asked by Men in Blazers to appear at BlazerCon on the 13th and 14th of November. I hope to make at least 11 best friends when I'm in New York. I can't wait. See you there.
Can't wait to meet him. Rog, his first time in New York. First time in America, Rog.
It's going to be like a sense of remake of Eddie Murphy's Coming to America, Davey.
Yeah.
Can't wait to ask him what he thinks of Wayne Rooney. Old enough to be his dad.
Very true.
He's even younger than Anthony Martial.
Yeah, big exactly. Con. There will be beer. There will be pie. There will be singing and dancing. Tickets to BlazerCon, about 100 still left, November 13th and 14th in Brooklyn, are available on our website, meninblazers.com. Can't wait for it. Getting excited. Getting the thickening.
I've had it for months.
You're a younger man than me, Rog. We got a packed show. We avert our eyes as we break down the Manchester Derby, a game so ugly that it set sport and civilization back several centuries. We recap West Ham's 2-1 win over Chelsea and the Mourinho meltdown.
Nothing to
see
there.
That saw him sent to the naughty step for the second half. And we break down Arsenal's rain-soaked win over Everton at the Emirates. Plus, decision day in MLS, an NWSL move for Alex Morgan, Rog, and the US is bounced from the under-17 World Cup. To the football. Let's crack open a Guinness. You've got the regular black tube today. I'm going with the Nitro IPA, made from not one, not two, not three, not four, five hops, Rog, go into this wonder.
You know, you've had lunch and I haven't.
That is true. I did have lunch. I had a lovely lunch today. Cheers.
To your health and happiness. Can I say, what an exhausting weekend it's been. Some heavy storylines, really heavy storylines. Yeah. I found it all exhausting. I don't know how Rebecca Lou does it. She's 4 months pregnant. She sits there. She just blows me away.
Also, a lot of other sport. We had the Rugby World Cup semi-finals going on. We had the big one, Rog, the Jacksonville Jaguars versus the Buffalo
Bills.
Picking
the Super Bowl.
At Wembley.
Thank you, NFL
Films.
The
Super Bowl. Yeah, thanks, NFL Films.
For having us. Those clips we did, I thought they were unwatchable.
No, they were great, Rog.
Almost every single, but I felt like every player we interviewed, it was like Spinal Tap drummers we were interviewing. They just like, boom.
Yeah.
Tyrod Taylor, Carl Williams, Percy Harvin.
Yeah, everyone injured.
They had 25 million hits. Those videos.
That's good.
That's my mother-in-law working unbelievably hard. Day and night, she must have been sitting up just clicking, 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 clicking. But it was, I can't imagine the Super Bowl is going to top that.
It's really helped me. You know, my partner is from Buffalo, so I really got into Buffalo this season for the first time. Then, coincidentally, we got hired to go and do this. I must say, I have never been more into NFL football. I am excited. 26 years after coming to the United States, I have finally, properly fallen in love with American football.
I've loved it more.
I know, you've loved it for a long time.
When the Bears won the Super Bowl, it's probably one of the top five moments of my life. And I will say, Kansas City being back in the World Series.
Yeah, that's
baseball. I found it very moving, because the first World Series I ever saw was Kansas City, St. Louis.
Wow.
It was the George Brett was amazing. Mm-hmm. Brett Saberhagen. Oh, great. And I found it very, very emotional. Come on, the Mets.
Yeah, mainly for Gary in accounting, because our accounts will be a real mess if they don't win the World
embezzler.
Series.
The embezzler.
No, he's not an embezzler. Gary is a wonderful...
By the way, I love talking about American... So I found this, as I say, this weekend was very, very hard for me to compute.
When football
mostly,
is crap,
mostly because I'm still coming to terms with Carl Martino's new haircut.
Yeah, it's a very... I don't know what it is. It's just a certain kind of quiff. He's had it shorter at the sides as well.
Yeah, well, I spoke to him about it.
Yeah.
I phoned him up.
Uh-huh.
I was like, we're preparing for BlazerCon.
Yeah.
But I used it as an opportunity to just be like, Kyle.
The big questions.
WTF, the hair. And he told me it was a complete and utter accident. That he went to the usual barber and the barber just got a little heavy-handed. And all I say is it wasn't a conscious choice.
I don't believe you, Kyle Martino. I see you, Kyle Martino. I see you. I see you. All done that. Oh, no, it was an accident. It really wasn't what I was intending to have.
What's going to be interesting is whether Giroud follow suit.
Yeah, we'll see. There is a striking similarity in many ways between the two men. Okay, Rog, we are now 10/38ths of the way. That reduces, Rog, 5/19ths of the way through the Premier League season. 5/19ths. You now get a real sense of how far we are through.
We know nothing.
That is more than a quarter of the way through the Premier League season. And it was a weekend in which the league's top teams proved just how superior they are. After all, you have to be really good to play that crap, Rog. First of all, Manchester United 0, Manchester City 0. Two highly touted, heated rivals step into the ring for what was billed as the fight of the year. And neither lands a punch. A melange, Rog, of wasted chances and misplaced passes made the 170th Manchester derby one of the more forgettable. The point is
what's
good enough.
What's a melange, David?
I don't know.
It's
but
quite
I'd
erotic.
Like some for pudding. It's making me hungry.
The point... is that a type of movie?
No, it's a mix.
I'm getting really into melanges.
A melange. The point is good enough for City to stay top on goal difference. United, meanwhile, slip to fourth, Roger.
Oh, so excited for this game, David.
Yeah.
Top of the table tilt.
Yeah.
The most expensive lineups of footballers to ever grace a Premier League game.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation adjusted. The psychotic bluster of Louis van Gaal.
Yeah.
Versus the negative charisma of Manuel Pellegrini. He's like an anthropomorphic cigarette to me, that man.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Martial versus the Ginger King.
Kevin De Bruyne.
I couldn't have been more excited. I couldn't. Sunday morning, and the excitement was equal in proportion to my disappointment at the final whistle. It's meant to be two of the best teams in England. They look more like two teams exhausted by their midweek Champions League endeavours. And a game where the fear of losing far outstripped the desire to win for either team. It was really, Davo, the football equivalent, to extend your fight metaphor, of the Pacquiao Mayweather fight.
Yeah, without a doubt. Sometimes, Rog, football is just crap. It just is, you know, and there's no insurance against it. It's just crap. But usually what you have in any situation is you have a team that needs to win more. And the reality of the Premier League this season, because so many teams are dropping points, there isn't that urgent need to win games that you've felt previously. And suddenly, where it hasn't been good for a few seasons, every time a team didn't get a win at the top, you felt like, oh, they slipped back. Now it feels this season, a point is okay again. This is what the old Premier League used to be. This is what it used to be.
I understand that, Davo, but this game was bad.
Yeah, it was poor.
1877 cars for kids, bad, Davo.
But worse than that, Rog.
It took
it might have been better than that.
And by the way, Google that charity before you give it your car.
We had a shot.
Or your kid. That's all I'll tell you.
Yeah, no, it's cars for kids, not kids for cars. Just Google the charity.
It took 82 minutes for the first shot on target in this match. And that shot was by Jesus Navas, so it must have been an accident. United didn't have their first shot on target until the
88th minute.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean,
City had an excuse. Shaun of David Silva, their creative brain. Kun Aguero, their cutting edge.
Yeah.
Both out with an injury. They were content to play on the counter, but with Raheem Sterling overawed and Ginger King KDB, probably his worst day in a City jersey thus far. He made wrong decision after wrong decision. And Boney and Touré demonstrated all the electric chemistry of Jerry Hall and Rupert Murdoch on each other's arm. They had very little to show for it, Davey. In truth, with Schneidlin, Schweinsteiger, Fernandinho and Fernando clogging at the midfield, there wasn't a lot of room to create. And with Martial trapped on the wing. Oh, poor Wayne Rooney, Davey. He cut a sad, isolated figure.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Man City particularly played very, very narrow in this game. I know that sort of upset, maybe too big a word, Van Gaal. Van Gaal at least noticed it after the game, how compact they were. And look, the strength of Man United, certainly this season, looks to be at the back. Suddenly, Chris Smalling, he's world class, one of the top three central defenders in the world, says Wayne Rooney. And he has, in fairness, been very, very good. The re-evaluation of Phil Jones, he's been pretty good at centre-back. But it was the lack of attacking play, except for a few isolated great moments, mainly involving Anthony Martial, Rog. It was a poor game.
In the second half, I found it upsetting to watch Wayne Rooney, David. I mean, if you remember what it was like when he came through, and he was an athlete that was packed with power, cockiness, swagger, and vision. Now he just seems burnt out paying a penalty for playing so much so young.
I still think he has moments, though, you do. Rog. I mean, look, the goal he scored against Everton last week, that was a moment. It was like Rooney of yore, that goal.
Everything United in this game, everything they built seemed to fall apart there when the ball came to Rooney's feet. I was saying, you can't doubt his commitment, nor his bravery.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him have staples pitch side and then charging back onto the field. A bloke.
From a leaky hair transplant.
Arguably. But he looks laboured and slow. 55% pass accuracy, zero shots on target, zero chances created, zero take-ons. In the weekend, he turned 30.
Well, he tried some take-ons, Rog, but he was tackled so quickly. That step isn't there, and he's getting red, and he's getting tackled quite easily.
There's a great Daily Email media redef by a wonderful bloke, Jason Hershaw. I mean, it's a fascinating filter on media and technology writing. I can't say enough good about
it. Good.
Subscribe.
Very good.
He always tops it with a great quote. And this morning, it was one from the great Miles Davis, mm-hmm. who said, a legend.
GFOP. Loves the pod.
Miles.
Yeah.
He never returns our emails to come on as a guest.
Weird.
A legend. Is it? Oh, I'd love Miles Davis to come on the pod.
No relation.
He would love Crystal Palace. A legend is an old man with a cane, known for what he used to do. I'm still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He might as well have been talking about Wayne Rooney, Davo. LVG refused to talk about his captain after the game, but the pressure's building for him to play Martial up top with Memphis possibly out on the flank, giving United a direct speed that they lacked in this game. I mean, if United had Martial through the middle, what might have been in this game? And that's for me, who doesn't believe about being hypothetical about history.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's quite his role either. Like, right up top. He might play better in that number 10 role, ultimately. We saw a preview of that, you know, when Lingard came on. A young player I've liked for a long time.
Why do you like him?
I like an English player with a foreign-sounding name, Rog. Jesse Lingard comes on. Martial puts that glorious dink to him over the top. And Lingard, great movement. Almost a fantastic goal with the outside of the foot over Joe Hart, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, that late cameo by Lingard, it definitely gave you a sense of what might have been. And I think the question of Rooney is now torturing United fans. So, I mean, Martial, Lingard together, so much talent, so much attacking intent. But right now, you've got Martial welded to the byline while he's waiting for Wayne to wake up from his old man's nap. Final whistle came as an incredible relief. Louis van Gaal asked afterwards if 0-0 was the right result. He answered, it's a rhetorical question. You can answer it for yourself. My answer would be, Davo, sometimes football can be just a little crap. At Reed Nelson 23 said, 170th Manchester Derby, 169 have been more exciting than this one.
And it's true, it doesn't really matter. Man City stay on top, just on goal difference, 22 points. Man United just 2 points behind them, Rog, on 20.
The most interesting story out of Manchester this week, David, the Bastian Nazi doll.
Oh my goodness, Rog. The Manchester United midfielder Bastian Schweinsteiger is reported to be taking legal action to force a Hong Kong doll manufacturer to pull from its product range a Nazi doll that bears a striking resemblance to him.
It's shockingly like him.
The German tabloid Bild said that the star footballer's lawyers had begun proceedings in order to prevent sales of the 30-centimetre figure. What is that? 30 divided by 2.5. That's about 12 inches.
It's not life-size.
It's a foot long. It's a foot long. That is due to retail for around £78. That's 958 Hong Kong dollars. About 110 US dollars. Bild quoted the manufacturing company Dragon in Dream as saying that it was pure coincidence that the figure resembled a 31-year-old. It said the name was also a coincidence, as many people in German are called Bastian. The figure comes with a steel helmet, a woolen cap bearing a swastika and a dagger. It also comes equipped with outfit changes, including a white winter jacket and gloves, and other accessories such as two loaves of bread and a set of mess tins.
Yep, the company said the figure is based on a typical German. We believe all Germans look like that. They also make a Stalin, David. I mean, the fact that it looks like a Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Does that come with a loaf of bread as well?
The fact that it looks like Bastian Schweinsteiger, I think, may be missing the lead. A company is making a Nazi doll for children to play with. The company also makes a Stalin action figure.
Good point, Rog.
Who lets their children play with a Nazi doll, David? And why?
I feel like when we had Action Men when we were kids, which were like G.I. Joes, the British G.I. Joes, I think they were Nazi Action Men. But you might have had one. No, we used to do terrible things to them. Like we'd make them jump out of the window without a parachute and things like that. In some forms of games, I could see they'd be valuable, Rog.
If the manufacturers of the Bastian doll are listening, I'd love a Spanish anti-Franco soldier doll that looks like a like a cute little Juan Mata for my kids to play with. It'd be adorable.
That would sell very well. We should maybe make that at Men in Blazers. We should take international footballers,
yep,
have them in the sort of freedom fighting and good military roles. That's, yep, excellent.
The figure is based on a typical Spaniard, we'd say. I believe all Spanish people look like a cute little Ewok.
Okay, Rog, it's time. West Ham 2, Chelsea 1.
No big surprise.
The Irons, no, I know.
Ain't no big deal.
This isn't. Move along. The Irons claim another major scalp, Rog, repelling a 10-man Chelsea, who were actually better with 10 men than 11, from the Berlin ground. Mauro Zarate opened the scoring in the 17th minute with a blast past Asmir Begovic. Despite a second yellow for Nemanja Matic just before halftime, Chelsea pulled level through Gary Cahill in the 56th minute, but 11 minutes from full time, one small step for man, one giant leap for man buns. Andy Carroll headed home an Aaron Cresswell, former Ipswich Town Aaron Cresswell, cross to claim all 3 points. West Ham up to third, Chelsea back down to 15th. I thought they were already 15th.
Chelsea's waking nightmare continues.
It is. It's the walking dead.
The renaissance of last Saturday. Mourinho, yeah, we still may win 4 trophies.
Yeah.
It's all just a fleeting bump all teams face when they play Aston Villa.
Yeah.
11 points from opening 10 games,
yeah,
for the defending champions.
True.
Those are sub-Brodge numbers, Davey.
They really are sub-Brodge numbers. The truth is, actually, compared to other Chelsea performances this season, this wasn't a bad performance. But the more striking thing is just how good West Ham were for periods of this game, particularly in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, credit West Ham, because the way they played, and they played in this game, the victory came as no surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, their movement, their attacking intent, their speed on the break, it has undone and will undo better teams,
yeah,
than this Chelsea team.
Oh, and they've beaten very good teams this season.
There's the game and there's the narrative. And the narrative was fascinating because before the game, Jose Mourinho vowed to stay out of the news. He said it's been a difficult week, referring to a week in which he was filmed shoving a teen selfie taker out of the way on the street. It's an amazing piece of film. It's everything, yeah, and it's nothing. But he literally just, he's like Earl Campbell, kind of just piling through the defensive line. He said, "You don't get from me good and funny headlines," he promised, hopefully with his fingers crossed behind his back, as he said it on Friday in the pre-game press conference, because this one, it was bonkers. Started with the West Ham goal. Zarate!
From a corner, Rog. Chelsea have been terrible from corners this season. Corner comes in. Diego with a terrible whiff on the front post. Hazard nowhere near
not tracking
his
back.
Man, Rog, and Zarate thump.
John Terry turning into a statue as the ball whizzed on by. Old John Terry would have flung himself at it like Clint Eastwood in the line of fire. What a cataclysm of errors for Zarate, the face of an altar boy, the tattoo sleeves of a prisoner in the Russian gulag. But then Chelsea, enough narrative to feel hard done by, arguably. Yeah. Game of inches, David.
Yeah, game of inches. First of all, goal that didn't cross the line, the goal that looked to everyone in the world as they you were waiting for the decision system, looked like a goal, looked like it was over, but by the thinnest of margins.
Lanzini scooped it onto the line, and Lanzini scooped it off the line.
Absolutely fantastic, fantastic work by Hawkeye.
I believe Hawkeye showed just the identical photo. I don't believe there's any technology involved. I believe they've just got one for Chelsea. It's that little slither. It's like a finger from the FA to Chelsea after all that Jose Mourinho has done to torture their referees. They just, whatever happens to Chelsea, that is the photo you are going to get all season.
I've met the inventor of Hawkeye a few times, a brilliant man, Paul Hawkins, OBE. I believe he's a Chelsea fan. I'm sorry, Paul, if you're not a Chelsea fan, and I'm unfairly pinning that on you.
You've met the inventor of Hawkeye?
Yeah,
Hawkins. In my imagination, does he look like Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future?
No, he's a young guy. He's an amazingly young guy who invented Hawkeye. I mean, he's very young. I believe he's a Chelsea fan. I might have that wrong, in which case I'm very, very sorry, but I don't believe there's any conspiracy against Chelsea.
The Hawkeye inventor would have been very disappointed with Cesc's non-goal offside decision.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was close. Was it a goal? I don't know.
It was reward and punishment in my mind.
It's tough. There's no way that a linesman, you're meant to give the benefit of the doubt, but we've seen many goals that weren't offside called. I think that probably was marginally offside. You can't complain about that.
West Ham continued to buzz on the counter. Yeah. Kayati felt omnipresent in midfield. And right after the hook off the line, the madness started to begin, Davey. Yeah. Matic's one-man crusade. I think Matic was less a footballer, more product placement for the Rugby World Cup in this game.
He got his first yellow card, right after the hook off the line. And the second yellow card, Roger. Madness. I mean, the whole first half, there's something very bizarre going on with Matic. I understand the loss of form. Loss of form is one thing. But I feel like there's something deeper going on. Matic was a guy who, even when he was playing well, you didn't really notice him. He was not a player you noticed. Even when you were live at Stamford Bridge, you didn't really notice
Nemanja
Matic.
He's like an offensive lineman that you only notice when they're caught for holding or the quarterback sack. You never notice him otherwise.
You just didn't see him very much. And now his attitude, his lolloping, his demeanour, like everything just appears not quite right.
Few players have declined from impregnable to liability so shockingly quickly. It was only a year ago we were hailing the brave Matic return for $44 million. Well, as a masterstroke of team building.
Look, we saw Vincent Kompany last season decline very, very quickly and come back this season. The allegedly off-field things going on which affected that. And I'm just suggesting that potentially we're seeing some off-field stuff that we don't know about which is affecting Nemanja Matic.
Well, his red card, everything bubbled over. A moment where Chelsea's lack of belief and lack of discipline, it just came out, frustration everywhere, yellow cards handed out for dissent all over the place. Jose Mourinho later tried to storm the referee's locker room at halftime. And I think much of what's been happening behind closed doors amongst the players just spilled out for a moment in full public eye.
Mourinho said to the press a few weeks ago that it was time to play the kids. He also then said that he was going to give Ruben Loftus-Cheek an extended run in the side. Ruben Loftus-Cheek's
extended run meant 45 minutes,
pulled at halftime and no longer back in the team. This is a team that still, wherein there is absolutely no competition for places whatsoever. And that's got to affect the mentality of this squad, the mentality of this team.
Having said that, with 10 men...
they were great!
West Ham came out for the second half, sitting deep, holding on, huge mistake, and off a set piece. Who scored?
Yeah, everybody would have expected this, Rog. Gary Cahill. Gary Cahill scored a goal. Not Willian, who frankly looked like the best player on the pitch. I really think that Willian is having an amazing season, and not just for his unintentional goals from set pieces, but Gary Cahill scores a goal.
I love Gary Cahill scoring goals, because when Gary Cahill scores goal, no one looks more amazed that Gary Cahill has scored a goal than Gary Cahill.
I did a goal, as you said yesterday. I did a goal.
But then who came on to do a goal? Andy Carroll.
The best plan B in football, Rog.
At Longo, Calrissian tweeted, come off the hour, come off the man bun. English, Andy Carroll, what a player. English poet, soccer scribe, Bonnie Renee. Fantastic. Guardian writer. once called Andy Carroll. He called him a dead ox carcass that can be catapulted beyond the castle walls during a medieval siege, which is possibly a tiny bit unfair, but it's brilliant. But he trundled on, Dave, and he did just that to the Chelsea defence.
Well, the Chelsea defence, Rog, Cahill, Terry and Zouma playing in that back line. Zouma playing at right back, which is confusing enough. What on earth they spent $20 million for Baba Rahman if he's never going to get a game at left back, like Azpilicueta playing his natural position at right back. With three central defenders, Zouma, Cahill and Terry, and Andy Carroll on the pitch, who is defending him at that set piece? Dave Azpilicueta, Roger, all 4'3" of him.
And up leaps Andy Carroll. Ugh. What Irvin Welsh, the great Scottish writer and West Ham fan, would call goal of a shagger.
Yeah, it was.
First one for that shagger. I like saying that. Shagger. Since January. Shagger. And then the cameras cut to Jose Mourinho in the West Ham director's box where he had been. And everyone in the box was cheering ecstatically, apart from Jose, looking on, stony-faced, miserable and alone. That image reminded me of what all my bar mitzvah photographs look like.
Really?
Everyone's happily dancing the hora.
Really?
And I'm there dressed up like a tiny accountant, confused and afraid.
It's because you're thinking, where's Davo? Where's Davo? Davo isn't here. Something's wrong.
I was thinking, why have I got half brows? Congratulations to West Ham. Played four of last season's top six and slayed them all. West Ham were fourth this time last year, Davo. They're third right now. Will they stay there this season? Because last season, they ended 12th.
Well, they got a good squad, Roger, and they got a better squad this year than they had last year.
I mean, to me, Dimitri Payet is the difference maker. Did like this tweet, though, from at Seth Myers. Pie don't lie at Men in Blazers. Hashtag West Ham.
So good.
And I'm sure he was among the West Ham fans chanting, "You're not special anymore. You're not special anymore," at Jose.
Well, he called it 2-2, actually, his pie. He called it 2-2. And I asked him, would that be in red cards or would that be in goals? What he was probably... His pie incorrectly saw the goal line technology goal, thought that was a goal, or perhaps the offside goal, thought it was a goal.
I mean, to be candid, pies don't understand Hawkeye, but we've got to get the mice to work on that. What has happened and what will happen with Jose, Dave? Unhinged, spiralling out of control, the Eva Caniero, the player blaming, the ref blaming, the false results, the unprovoked obsessive attacks on Arsene Wenger. He's like Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Well, I think the reason that they're not playing well is for footballing reasons. And footballing reasons are sometimes also mental. And it's exponential. When one player starts performing a little worse, it means that that pass to the next person isn't as good. The next person doesn't have the confidence in you. They start to lose confidence in themselves. There are still some very good performances in this Chelsea side. And I think we're seeing the best football that Willian has ever played for this team. We're seeing Ramirez play very, very well for this team right now.
But for Mourinho, this is what I don't understand. I mean, we're used to him. So smart. So ahead of all those around him. He was the guy that would always get the last word, no matter in these kind of managerial press conference arguments. You always knew he was one step ahead, at least one, of everybody around him. But right now, I mean, he was impossible to debate. He was the master. Now he just seems floundering. I mean, is he crazy like a fox, David? We grew up on POW dramas. They were all the same. Yeah. Where we'd watch an English officer be captured by the Germans and try and persuade them that they were insane. But by acting insane over a long period of time, they eventually became properly bonkers. That was pretty well every BBC mini-series I watched as a child. What is happening to him? Because he seems borderline cuckoo. And I'm wondering whether he's feigning it. He wants the sack. There's the rumours of payoffs, $47 million, imminent moves to PSG or even Inter Milan. Mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing stuff, Roger. I have no idea about any of that. What I would say is we often talk about it in the TV business is there are executives who are fantastic at managing success. They're very good at managing growing businesses. And those same executives sometimes struggle in a business in decline. They don't manage so well as a business declines. And I think that Chelsea... of a very different Chelsea than Chelsea were in 2004, 2005. You know, he brought them success for the first time in 50 years. They won the league title for the first time in 50 years under Jose, who is he was managing a growing franchise. Now he's coming in a period of sort of more equality, more decline, more pressure, the media pressure, the 24/7 news cycle, social media is tougher than ever. And it's just difficult. I actually still do think that he has the quality to go and figure this out. And I think, but the question that none of us really know, and none of the journalists who think they know really know, is what's going on behind the scenes. What I have heard is going on, but my sources could be as incorrect and useless as anybody else's, is that Roman Abramovich is very torn. It would seem like a huge sign of weakness to get rid of the manager who he bought back in order to end a period when he was firing and changing the managership at Chelsea every season, it felt.
By two minds, you mean Roman Abramovich is having a Jaden Smith moment?
He's having a Jaden Smith.
I'm going to fire him.
I know.
Or maybe
boom,
I won't
patterns,
fire him.
Boom, patterns. And it's a big payoff. It's a big payoff.
Talk of Hiddink coming back. Ancelotti coming back.
He's done it before.
Possibly just as caretaker managers until Pep Guardiola makes his mind up about whether or not to sign a Bayern Munich new contract. I'd love AVB to come back if we're doing repeats, Davey.
Yeah.
With his PowerPoints, his Spanish side buckle, his Japanese sleeping pods. Oh, it'd be magnificent. Liverpool away. Mourinho may not even be in the dugout because a misconduct charge is looming and a ban is probably going to be handed down. I'm going to ask you this, Davey.
Yeah.
You fire people. It's a horrible part of your job.
It's the worst thing to have to do.
How do you fire Jose Mourinho? How do you fire that man?
Well, I don't think Roman Abramovich does not strike me as a guy who suffers from the same emotional trauma of firing people as I do. He seems to be pretty good at it. I doubt he does it himself. I'm pretty sure he has Bruce Beresford or one of his people, one of his henchmen, do it for him. But it's going to require a very big check. It's not a bad, it's not that bad a conversation for Jose Mourinho to like get fired by Chelsea.
Oh, I imagine you fire him by shooting him in the heart with a small crossbow.
I don't think that's going to happen.
How does it feel? I'm going to ask you this as a Chelsea fan. Are you A, shocked, distraught, concerned, full of fear for the future? B, more appreciative of the seasons of glory through this experience of mortality? C, not worried at all? Money will solve all problems. Or D, an option just for me projecting, confused, lonely, filled with self-loathing.
Sorry, it'll never be C. I must say, the past 11 years as a Chelsea fan have been amazing. We've won more than anybody else in English football, won more titles, including the big one, Rog, the Europa League. It was a big moment for me. We've won a lot. And there's part of me that thinks, just like when I've sort of enjoyed the last few seasons as an Orlando Magic fan, seeing the young players get a chance to play. Every week I hope I'm going to see Ruben Loftus-Cheek or Traoré or some of the young kids get a chance in this team.
So funny that, David.
But we're not getting it.
It's one of the things, biggest difference for me between English sport and American sport. English fans, because of relegation, English fans have no patience, no tolerance, no concept for a year of rebuilding.
Yeah. And I like rookies. I like watching the rookies play. I like watching the kids play. I really want us to go and see that.
I always admire American sports fans still buying season tickets when everyone's saying, this is going to be a rebuilding year, everyone. People still go.
And to some extent, having to do this every week, and not having to do, just the great delight of doing this every week, Roger, and doing the TV show, it almost, getting a season off from contending is almost a relief. Because I get to now just watch and be entertained by what's going on. And I actually think we've got a fascinating title drama this year with Arsenal, who are clearly the best team in the Premier League.
Let me ask you this, though.
Man City, who are clearly also very, very good.
When do I get my season on? When do I get my season on?
I don't know. You need your season on, Rog. You need your season on.
I understand.
We're taking a season off.
I understand from medieval crop rotation, there's a year when the field must lie fallow.
Yeah,
I've been very fallow.
That's about the only thing I learned during that unit, Rog. Talking of fallow, Rog, your Everton 1 away at Arsenal 2. A pair of headers less than 2 minutes apart earn Arsenal victory in a rain-drenched game that doubled as a wet T-shirt contest. In the 36th minute, Olivier Giroud flicked a pinpoint Mesut Ozil ball past a flapping Tim Howard. And almost immediately after the restart, Laurent Koscielny steered home a Santi Cazorla free kick. Also passed to a flapping Tim Howard. Ross Barkley pulled one back right before the break, but Arsenal hold on and draw level on points with league leaders Manchester City, Rog.
Oh, I'll just say, before kick-off, I think expectations were set at low. Everton had mustered just one win at Arsenal in 23 Premier League visits. And then Arsene Wenger's magical, pragmatic victory, darling night against Bayern Munich, midweek.
Yeah, amazing that.
And I say pragmatic victory with great respect. Uh-huh. I mean, Bayern had 73% of the possession. But Arsenal found a way to win. And Arsenal with kahunas.
Something that he hasn't done before, Rog. I love the way he played in that game.
Yeah, we never say an Arsenal with kahunas. Everton were not just facing Arsenal. They were facing the Bayern Slayers. And I knew it wasn't going to go well. But this Arsenal have so many ways of hurting you. The Ozils, the Sanchezes, the Ox, the Cazorla. Any one of those, Davo, you could build it. They're like, if they were just one of them on the team could be built around them. Maybe
so not. Many good players, Rog. So many good players.
At their best, this Arsenal team is like watching a breakdancing crew take turns to go to the centre of the stage and bust a move and do the work. They just see space, angles, secret passages, hidden doors that Everton didn't do. But the first half, Davo, oh, the rain. It was played in Blade Runner-esque monsoon conditions. The hair gel, it just runneth over.
Yeah, and it's a bald soothsayer, that kind of rain, Rog. I'm always just looking out for problems in various sectors.
Oh, yeah, that did dampen Arsenal's players. The rain was probably Everton's best player in the first quarter of the game. Arlo White explained, Arsenal couldn't get any purchase off the turf because it was so slick.
And a fantastic look, the partnership, Rog, between Ozil and Giroud. What struck me about both Arsenal goals, these are not the kind of goals we're used to seeing Arsenal score. And these are really useful goals to be able to score in the Premier League. Aerial threat, Roch. Set pieces. And that ball from Ozil to Giroud, fantastic ball.
Oh, seventh assist of the season.
Yeah, and Giroud's fifth goal of the season off the back of the head. Tim Howard might look at that and think, maybe I could have done better. He won't admit that. But a fantastic goal.
Less a goal, Davo, more a damn bursting, because within 106 seconds, the score was doubled.
Santi Cazorla with the ball in, and now Koscielny this time gets in. Goal from a centre-back, very, very useful.
Say this every week now, Davo. Yeah. Everton's soft centre at set pieces. It's haunting the team all season long. It'll be even worse now that Jags injured out for two months.
For a while.
Fair game to Everton. They came out in the second half with their naive, innocent attempts to pass and move and find a way back into the game. Watching them try and play the ball out the back, it's like witnessing a baby giraffe take her first steps on a fertile savannah populated by packs of famished lions. Barkley, McCarthy, Lennon flickered around, twiddling with endeavour. Did I have any hope? I never did, Dave. Everton just felt like a scrappy-do to Arsenal's Scooby. Mm-hmm. They had their chances. Ross Barkley scored a deflective goal. Arsenal definitely left it more open than teams not called Arsenal would have done. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, Lukaku hit the bar. Guinness was spilled as that ball pinged off the post. When called upon, Cech was excellent. And a hard victory for Arsenal, Dave, after the champagne hangover at midweek, and a very different kind of victory than we used to them last season. I mean, they wouldn't have had the energy, both physical and mental, to repel Everton in that kind of a game.
Yeah, but I've rarely been more impressed, Rog, by two games from Arsenal in the space of a week. This fantastic performance against Bayern, starved of possession, winning that game on the counter-attack. And then this workmanlike, almost, dare I say it, Chelsea of last season-like performance against
Everton. Say that with respect.
Everton. Yeah, it was almost like Chelsea-like. It was that kind of a goal. It was the aerial threat. It was the set pieces. It had some steel to it, Rog.
And Arsenal now have a relatively kind run of games until they face Manchester City 21st December. They'll believe that unless the squad's worn down by an injury to Giroud or Sanchez, the challenge for the title is real. Fascinating dilemma for them. Yeah. Early part of the season, they lamented the lack of a world-class striker in the squad. Now they've got the pace of Theo, the all-round beauty of Giroud. Do they think they've solved their striking dilemma, Davo? Or during the transfer window, do they buy an elite striker and really claim the title? Is it their promised land?
Yeah, I think that's what I would like to see them do if I was a fan. They've also got Welbeck. Don't know how long that injury is going to last, but think about how many other good players they have, Rog.
Keep your hands off Stevie Naismith, Wenger. Listen to me. Valiant defeat for Everton. A relief after last week's damp squib against United, but no points is no points.
Liverpool 1, Southampton 1. Two goals in the final 13 minutes of Jurgen Klopp's first Premier League game at Anfield. Substitute Christian Benteke put Liverpool up with a thumping header in the 77th minute from a Milner ball. But just 4 minutes from time, Southampton, Sadio Mane turned in a loose ball. Crap goal, actually, preventing the first win of the Klopp era.
Reality bites for Liverpool. Under Klopp, three games, three draws, and at least two hair colours. think he's gone to Teutonic Bronze now, Davo. And the heavy metal football that's been wished for is still to come. I don't remember the Liverpool PA system playing Ramstein pre-game for Brendan Rodgers, Davo. But you know what? He's so good at. All he realises he needs to do is just project confidence, project confidence, project confidence.
And also progress. He's projecting progress all the time.
Oh, progress in order. I spoke to a Liverpool mate of mine, Gifford, before the game. And he told me he spent Friday morning watching Klopp's pre-match press conference over and over and over
Gifford
and over.
Miller.
Gifford.
I know Gifford Miller.
On YouTube. He said Klopp's charisma is enthralling. Sometimes football press conferences this season, Davo, they're better than the actual football.
Yeah.
This was
true.
A bit of a grind too.
It was a grind. Rog, fairly physical game. I was sort of impressed with how this Southampton, another team who are playing with real steel this season, which I like to see. It's very good for that team. Playing in those awful-looking shirts.
Seattle Sounders green.
Awful-looking shirts, but there's quite a lot of steel.
Liverpool had the majority of possession, full of intent, shallower penetration, effort 10, execution 3. Coutinho yet to impress under Klopp. Some Liverpool fans starting to worry he's had his head turned by Barcelona transfer rumours. Adam Lallana, though, bit of a spark plug. He never planned this for Brendan. The game warmed up in the second half.
Oh, the Moreno tackle, Rog. That was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, the NFL would brand that as the tackle, and they make a 30 for 30 out of it.
Yeah.
And then a thunderous header from Benteke.
Fantastic header from Benteke. Ball in from James Milner, who's also playing fantastically under Jurgen Klopp. Roger, great acquisition for them. And they go 1-0 ahead. And at that point, watching the game, I thought, wow, Klopp's got his first win.
He charged down the sideline. He leapt into the air.
He made air.
It was a magnificent sight, Dave. It was like watching an eagle take flight in a nature film, but it was not to be. Mm-hmm. The equaliser from Mane. Liverpool's defence as ugly as Firmino's neck tattoo.
Yeah, from a James Ward-Prowse free kick. It bounced all around the area. Flick from Font. End up Gaston Ramirez got it back, and Mane knocks it in. Not the most attractive goal he'll ever score, but a goal all the same.
Poor Klopp on the sideline, crushed for a second, but then he remembered the memo about projecting confidence, and he quickly started
clapping. He loves to clap.
Oh, he loves to clap. First time Liverpool have drawn 5 in a row since 1975. Seven of Liverpool's past 9 games have finished 1-1.
Yeah.
Numbing fair. Naysayers already talking about must wins now for Klopp, which I think is absolute crap. There's a lot to be optimistic about. They're unbeaten. They've got players returning. Klopp is a builder. He's not an overnight miracle worker. The two clubs he's been at, Mainz and Dortmund, he overachieved with them both, but they were long builds, Dave. Long-term plays. Stayed at each for 7 years. His style is pace and width. Liverpool lack both right now. Neither of them are going to come overnight.
Sunderland 3, Newcastle 0. Rog, one of the games of the weekend, the Tyne Wear Derby sees Sunderland win their first game of the season and sixth in a row against their northeastern neighbours. An Adam Johnson penalty and goals from Billy Jones and a glorious Stephen Fletcher goal, Rog, lift Big Sam's side off the bottom of the table into 18th place ahead of Newcastle and Villa. Good for Big Sam, Rog.
This is like the Jags Buffalo of the English Premier League.
It was.
Magical game built entirely on locality. Regional passion 100, national relevant 0. Big Sam was the story going into the game. Unbelievably, all the last three managers in Sunderland's always revolving Groundhog Day door, the Canio Puyet Advocat, had won the Tyne and Wear Derby in their second game. Would Big Sam keep the record intact?
Or would he intentionally lose to protect his job?
It was even tastier because he'd been the Newcastle manager for 8 degrading months. First man to manage both teams, leading a new army into battle against his old, like Horatio Gates, Robert E. Lee, and more like Alaric, King of the Visigoths, physically. I loved it beforehand. We played it on the show. He said, "You wake up in the morning and still feel the tingle."
Oh, we love the tingle.
Oh, Big Sam, he's got some nipples, Dave. But the entirety of the first half, it was all Newcastle. 10 shots on target, 68% possession. Sissoko charging down the right flank. DeAndre Yedlin, we got to say, not overawed.
Yeah.
Fearless for Sunderland. Unfazed. Very good at throw-ins.
Oh, he's so good at throw-ins.
I don't think anyone takes more per game. But then it changed in a minute from control to catastrophe, according to Steve McLaren. Defoe had come on as a sub, rolled in the astute Steve Fletcher. He went shoulder to shoulder with Colaccini, or elbow to shoulder as the ref saw it. The keeper had the ball, though. How could that be a goal-scoring opportunity, but the ref judged it to be red-carded Colaccini? The red card has since been rescinded. and triple jeopardy, Davo, a move that saw Newcastle to absolutely dominate the first half but go in 1-0 with a red card, a penalty, and then 10 men. We hate triple jeopardy, right?
We hate triple jeopardy. We hate first half red cards. First half red card is punished so much more severely than an 88th minute red card. There seems to be no reason, Roger.
Adam Johnson scored the penalty, then ran towards the Newcastle fans who'd been chanting, "You're a paedophile," for the entire game. I'd say if he was a baseball player, after that celebration, he would have got beamed by the pitcher next time up at bat. A lot of you said he'd be beamed for other reasons. Nice to see a happy Sam, though. Yeah. I love his reactions. His tubby little tummy, getting it off his seat, the fist pump. It's like watching Putin smile. You get a discomforting sense that just below the surface, someone somewhere has just been killed. And by the end, he was grinning like a man ready to go home, lather himself up, and eat a bacon butty with a steak and kidney pie chaser.
Yeah.
Six in a row, chanted the Sunderland fans, who would have had the night of their lives Sunday, then woken up and realised they're still third from bottom. John Green tweeted, "Sunderland would win the league if only they could play Newcastle every week."
Leicester 1, Crystal Palace 0. Rog, Jamie Vardy's league-leading 10th goal of the season for the Foxes at the King Power Stadium. Leicester is in 5th place, only 3 points behind Man City and Arsenal.
Oh, Real Madrid's Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
Or should that be Hammers Vardy, if transfer rumours are to be believed. I love the Leicester Mercury. Real Madrid coming in for Jamie Vardy, a 28-year-old striker who, until recently, was working in a Sheffield factory and playing non-league football. It's one of the most amazing stories in sport since Brady Anderson, who'd averaged 14 home runs, I think, for the Baltimore Orioles, suddenly hit 50 in 1996. Vardy's just like him, but without the chemicals. It's like the goal movie made real, Davo.
He's such an aggressive player as well. I love watching the way that he plays football. I love the aggression. I love the passion. I just love the confidence with which he approaches football. Roger, he just chases down every ball. I actually felt, watching him, he's a bit Suarez-like. I'm not sure there's another forward player in the league who plays a bit more on that aggressive Suarez style. He's just competing every second of every game.
Leicester City 5th. When do we take Leicester for real?
I think we've got to be taking them for real right now, Rog. I mean, it's a long season, but we're more than 25% of the way through. And they are showing heart. They're showing offense. They're playing good defense. They show bounce-back ability. Claudio Ranieri is an experienced manager. He's a manager who's stayed in the top five, top six of the table before. And he's been successful all over the world a little bit.
Let's check in after Christmas, when the brutal schedule over that holiday period favours those elite teams with enormous squads. I hope Leicester are still there or thereabouts.
Villa 1, Swansea 2, Rog. Tim Sherwood's last stand. It all started off so well with Jordan Ayew's clever header putting Villa ahead in the 62nd minute. But a 68th minute, Giffy Sigurdsson free kick and Andre Ayew winner 3 minutes from time put the nail in the 4-4 Tim's claret and blue coffin.
Oh, the Ayew brother derby. He ain't heavy. He's my Ayew.
Yeah.
All I'll say is, poor Tim Sherwood. The FA Cup final seems like it was years ago.
Yeah.
And as all Browns fans can attest, it is brutal being a supporter of a Randy Lerner team. Sherwood pushed out the Premier League moon door. A disastrous start to the season. Just one win. And that was on the first day against Bournemouth. In his defence, you could say he lost his three best players over the summer. Benteke, Delph and Vlaar. And talk cleverly, without any kind of replacement. Yet to grab 1 point from a possible 27, you will be a goner. I feel for Villa fans. Sherwood sacked. They're immediately linked to Brendan Rodgers and David Moyes. Arsene Wenger's protege, Remy Gard, also there or thereabout. They'll have the thickening with him. He's a tactically astute player manager. Apparently hit some bumps, those negotiations. But four words from us, Bob Bradley to Villa.
Yeah, would love to see Bob Bradley coaching in the Premier League. And yeah, I feel bad for Tim Sherwood. I'm not sure how any manager can do a better job. We're just seeing this revolving door at Villa. Unless something changes behind the scenes, I don't think any manager is going to do a better job. Roger, and what he did last season, keeping them up, going to the FA Cup final, it's going to be hard to recreate that work, Roger.
Surprised that Tim Sherwood to US men's national team rumours haven't begun.
Yeah, exactly.
A Brad Guzan reunion.
Yeah.
What could go wrong now?
Yeah, nothing, Rog. Bournemouth 1, Tottenham. Oh, 5. Rog. Spurs extend their unbeaten streak to 9 behind a Harry Kane hat-trick. Harry Kane hat-trick, Rog. Tottenham have not lost since opening day against Manchester United. They sit in 6th, Rog.
And Bournemouth scored first on 49 seconds. Fastest Premier League goal this season.
Mm-hmm.
The rules of don't score too early.
Yeah, it was a mistake.
Clash with That's So Spursy.
Yeah.
But the truth is, That's So Spursy died weeks ago. Oh, poor goalkeeper Arta Boric at fault for 3 goals. Bournemouth's shaky defence less secure than John Brennan's email account. And what a stat flip. Before the game, everyone talking about Harry Kane. 3 goals from 40 shots in his last Premier League appearances. Afterwards, the stats are England hitman Kane has 4 goals in his last 4 Premier League games. Harry Kane, you're a bully. That's what I'd say. At Rick Siegel, Harry Kane, like pumpkin spice lattes, doesn't turn on until the start of 4. Save for Bournemouth, the announcer, this is an amazing moment, left his mic on and was heard across the stadium proclaiming, hell, it's like men against boys. Oh, we love you, Bournemouth. Massive game this weekend, the Southampton, South Coast Derby, then Newcastle, Swansea and Everton, teams they do expect to take points from rather than the Manchester Cities and Spurs who've hammered them.
Stoke 0, Watford 2, Rog. The Hornets halt Stoke's 3-game winning streak thanks to goals from Troy Deeney and Almen Abdi. Watford faring the best of any of the Premier League new boys so far. They sit in 13th place, Rog. Norwich 0, West Brom 1. Speaking of newly promoted sides, Norwich falls to the Baggies at Carrow Road, courtesy of a Salomon Rondon, head of the Venezuelan, having a great season. Tony Pulis's team has kept 6 clean sheets in their last 9 league games. And in NMLS, the New York Red Bulls, Rog, are winners of the Supporters' Shield. Well done, New York Red Bulls. After beating the Fire 2-1 in Chicago Sunday, the Red Bulls finished the regular season level on points with FC Dallas, but edged them out on goal difference. MLS playoffs, Rog, will begin this week. DC United versus New England Revolution. The Seattle Sounders versus the LA Galaxy, Wednesday. On Thursday, Montreal versus Toronto and Portland versus Sporting Kansas City. Great time to be a Kansas City fan. The winners of those games will advance to Sunday's conference semifinals.
And well done, MLS, breaking its average regular season attendance.
Absolutely.
12.7% uptick, 21,574 fans a game this season. Increases the highest recorded by a major American sports league in more than 20 years. And in news that warms the cockles of my heart, the Philadelphia Union, magnificent hire as sporting director, Ernie Stewart.
Oh, we love it.
The Dutch-American US men's national team ledge who dazzled at the 94 World Cup, currently technical director at AZ Alkmaar in the Netherlands, where he groomed Josie and Aaron Johansson. I spent some time with him there. He is a serious, strategic, deft footballing mind. It's going to be magic to watch the impact he'll have on American soccer when he moves to Philly in January.
Fantastic stuff, Rog. In slightly worse news for US soccer fans,
it gets
Rog.
Worse for US men's soccer.
The under-17s have been knocked out of the World Cup in Chile. The team fell to the host nation 4-1 Friday in their final game of the group stage. That game comes after a 2-2 draw with Croatia and a 2-0 loss to a very good Nigerian side.
Last time the US failed to advance at the under-17 World Cup was the 2011 tournament. It never rains, it pours. We've got to look for positive news to the women's side of the game.
Yeah, David. Exciting news for the women's game, Rog. Alex Morgan has a new home.
Orlando, the latest new franchise in the league, and Orlando Pride announced themselves with possibly the biggest splash they could.
I love the name of
that
team. I love the name, the Orlando Pride.
They pull in Alex Morgan. Her husband, Savando Carrasco, plays at Orlando City, so I'm sure she is as elated to be there as they are to have her. For the US women's national team, Shannon Box, Laurie Chalupny, and Lauren Holiday all played their final matches, bidding the US farewell after glorious careers.
News from FIFA land, Rog. Monday was the deadline for candidates to declare they would run for FIFA president in February. It's looking like 8 people will vie for Sepp Blatter's position.
Yeah, almost all taught reform and reconstruction. Almost all have more baggage than the Louis Vuitton commercial. Mm-hmm. Plus Assange, plus arrest, they say in Michel Platini's home tongue. You got Platini and his mysterious, yet not so mysterious, $2 million disloyalty payment. Sheikh Salman, fresh off an anti-democracy crackdown in Bahrain that saw 150 athletes imprisoned and human rights groups accused of him being complicit in the torture of footballers. Sounds like he might be good for the job, David.
Perfectly qualified.
Probably the platform he's running on.
Yeah. Have you ever tortured anyone? Yes, perfect candidate.
Oh, you got the magically named Tokyo Segwale. It's actually spelt sex whale, which I'm sure will get the American vote.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-apartheid activist, served time on Robben Island, then became a mining mogul. But it's kind of caught up in the 2010 World Cup bid scandal. But they don't have to convince us, David. They just have to convince the 209 voters who were so impressed by Sepp Blatter in previous elections.
Yeah.
This is less democracy, more like a meeting of the Bonanno, Colombo, Gambino, Genovese and Lucchese mafia families. Mm. There will be a new Superdome.
On to our Ravens. Our first Raven is from Chris Stapps Paddock. I love that name, Rog. I fell in love with Tottenham Hotspur on a cold, rainy Seattle day in 2010 when Gareth Bale put three past Milan and announced his arrival in world football's elite. Since then, we've been through thick and thin. However, since then, I've had season-long flings with swashbuckling up-and-comers, Swansea, then Southampton, and now Leicester. Call me a romantic, but the drama and pizzazz, an underused word, of something new has always called to me. And unfortunately,
it's called fickle.
Have led me to leave Spurs behind on many a Saturday morning to watch something faster and sexier. The question is this: how do I explain this to Spurs? Are they asking for an explanation? Should I ask to be in an open relationship whereby I can enjoy the company of other teams while coming home to a team I know and love, even if I sometimes forget the names of the back line? Should I admit that I have a problem
when you wake up in the morning?
Football team couples counselling? Should I just call it quits and follow my heart? Help me, gents. I love football, but I'm just not always sure I love Spurs.
Oh, God. It's a fascinating question. First of all, it's not romantic. It's fickle, is what you are. But English football fans inherit a team through family or geography. That doesn't change. It's not a matter of personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
In this brave new world of global football fandom, David, shorn of bloodline and regional borders,
mm-hmm.
it's a world of freedom. Constant choice. What would you suggest?
I don't think you've got to explain it to Spurs. That's the central premise of the thing, is explaining it to Spurs. I don't think Spurs, they haven't won anything yet. You don't really owe them anything.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how much of the obligation is on the fans to commit and stay loyal.
Or for the teams to hold on to them.
How much is the burden on teams to emphasise positive, attractive, winning football?
Yeah.
I mean, I do think about how United have been impacted globally, tiny bit, by the Moyes and LVG stumbles. And then teams like Palace, Swansea, Southampton have got a real chance to build serious fan bases in America because their great form coincides with a surging interest in this country. I do think there should be some kind of ritual, David, that new fans should take when they finally selected a team in this country.
A blood oath.
Yeah, or a commitment ceremony. I mean, I don't have any tattoos, but I think maybe, I'm just floating this, US fans should consider getting their new team's crest inked onto their body so that the fandom, it's like more than just like a fleeting moment. Bournemouth fans, you get a pass because the logo is so nasty. A tattoo of cherries will just suffice.
The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Connor Principe of Portland, Rog. I'm 36 years old and still have a full head of hair. Congratulations.
Well done.
While I've always
the
found
your, are you know, gloating? You bastard.
He wants a patch. Yeah. While I've always, well, we've got mice.
Well, tell
and
them
they've
mice.
Had a serendipitous experience.
Well, tell them mice they've got a day off.
Yeah. While I've always found your discussions of balds versus bald deniers fascinating, I never thought it would apply to me. However, while watching Arsenal versus Everton this weekend, I had a personal epiphany / acid flashback after the fourth or fifth mention of the phrase meaty French forehead. The summer after I graduated college, my roommate and I travelled across North America in a 1992 Honda Civic to see a baseball game in all 30 major league stadiums. Knowing that I was going to be away from a barber all summer, I had a friend shave my head in preparation for sitting in the sunshine and humidity. As long as I could remember, I always wore my hair with a bit more body up front, my version of Morrissey circa 1984. After my head was shorn, however, I learned the disturbing truth. My head is perfectly round. This might sound like a brag to your listeners with full heads of hair. I assure you it is not. I learned that day that looking good as a bald man requires an imperfect head shape. For instance, Patrick Stewart and Jason Statham are great balds because their heads are not perfect spheres. Stewart's comes to an attractive Shelby-esque point, whereas Statham has a meaty British forehead. To your balds versus bald deniers discussion, I had this. Can you really blame someone for bald denying under any circumstance, or is the shape of one's head a mitigating factor? If Jurgen Klopp's head was perfectly round, would you still call him a bald denier? in the pejorative sense, or would you accept his choice to avoid baldness as a necessity to hide his perfect geometry?
Good question. I mean, the oddly shaped cranium.
Yeah.
I think the alien kicking its way out the back of the head is a true challenge. But I'd say hats are invented for a reason, Connor. You got to watch Peaky Blinders. I prescribe you watching a series of Peaky Blinders. Watch the wide array of hats on offer in that shape. And then just make your choice and face the future without fear.
Talking about facing the future without fear, Rog, onto our BlazerCon Song Contest. It's the last week of our BlazerCon Song Contest, Rog. The entries have been pouring in. As you'll recall, we asked you to pen a tune that captures the unique experience of being a football fan in America. The early mornings, the Guinness for breakfast, tying yourself to teams thousands of miles away, temporarily in the case of some of our GFOPs, your hometown MLS team, the US men's national team, the World Cup champion, US women's national team, all of it. These can be original songs or just lyrics set to another song. Send entries to meninblazers@gmail.com or via Raven to the crap part of Soho. The winner receives two passes to BlazerCon and will see their song performed by a team of Broadway musicians. Rog, we will announce the winners next week.
I think we've had so many great entries, there may be a couple of winners.
Oh. Okay, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Whoa, we're motoring, Rog. Chelsea versus Liverpool, Saturday at 8:45 a.m. Eastern Time. Palace versus Manchester United, Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Everton versus Sunderland, Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. All those games on the NBC family of networks.
Going to be in Charlotte watching those games.
Wow, Rog.
Quite going to love North Carolina.
And in an MLS, the Eastern Western Conference semifinals, as we just said, are scheduled for Sunday. The television schedule has not been released at the time of recording. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go
along
on Amazon
with our $1 million contract,
$1 million, just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the costs of creating the show and adding it to our $1 million. Rog, what are you putting in the Amazon store this week?
A book, Oblivion, a memoir by Hector Abad. I hope this is the last book in a deep wormhole in Colombia. Thank you, Narcos. This one is a beautiful memoir about a gent whose father was murdered by paramilitaries in the 80s. And it's a book about family. It's a book about memory. It's a book about longing. It is an exquisite book. All the time Manchester City were playing Manchester United, I just kept asking myself, is my time being well used watching this game? Or would I rather curl up with this book? And the game won, but the book should have done.
I'm also putting a book in the Amazon Emporium this week, Rog, and it's another great, great book. Makes me think the same thing that you're thinking. It is by World of Reading. It's a level one book, Rog. It's called These Are the Avengers, level one reader. My son George, getting very, very obsessed with superheroes, had to try and figure out how to sate his appetite for superhero backstories is what is really interesting. These World of Reading books, if you've got a son, if you've got a daughter, if you've got a nephew or just a little kid in the neighborhood who loves superheroes, these books are fantastic. They're really fun to read, particularly because they're quite short and the writing's quite big, so they're fairly, fairly easy to get through and get a child to bed in the evening.
Can't tell. I've been really into Supergirl. It's got the least...
Did very well. 12 million viewers.
The least realistic fight scenes of ever. It reminds you of watching The Bionic Man back in the day. It's like a nostalgia trip. Love it.
You can also connect to us by watching entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV, and Roku. Rog, it is also up on our website, meninblazers.com, also on meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. We've just posted a BlazerCon playlist, meninblazers.wickerspaces.com. That's a wonder of the modern world. You can follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Men in Blazers, at Rog Bennett on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, and at Embassy_Davies, and like us on Facebook. Rog, we've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. Please send your ravens to the crap part of Soho, and you can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Rog, Vendorpunkt.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Corduroy is coming.
Keep scoring. Keep assisting.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, David.
Love you too, Rog.